Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about money and politics today. Is campaign finance reform the answer? A constitutional amendment? And is Congress up to the task in any event? Retired newsman Dan Rather has followed money and politics for decades. In a new documentary, Of, By, For, he talks about what he considers the plight of the neophyte members of Congress and what happens over time.
I was always impressed by how idealistic most people who came to Washington were. Overwhelmingly, they cared about the country. They came to Washington because they wanted to be of service to the country. However, what happens when they get to Washington, you can see the change. It becomes about money.
Joining us now to talk about money and politics is Christopher Kay. He's the director of By Four. It's now showing at the Gateway Film Center. It has a limited engagement. For more information, go to the link at our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Welcome to the show, Christopher.
Great. Thanks for having me.
You're from Columbus. You went to Ohio State. How much do you think life in the center of the political storm for two, and some might say three presidential election cycles inspired this film?
Oh, I think a lot. I mean, the producer and I, Chad Monin, we're both from Columbus. So he's from Dayton originally, but lives in Columbus now. And I think being at the epicenter of every election for us, you know, we're inundated with every ad, every campaign stop, all the, you know, concerts and all the hype and the parade that goes along with getting us out to vote. And so, you know, feeling the effects of Karl Rove and all sorts of other electioneers, yeah, I think that definitely inspired us to go out and see how other people, you know, felt around the country.
Right. You hit the road. You traveled across the country by Route 66, as it were, to talk to regular people. How savvy are they, do you think, about how it works in Washington?
You know, I think in general they're very savvy. They at least know. I mean, when you say, hey, you know, money in politics is a problem, that seems pretty obvious to everyone, and everyone kind of shared that opinion. There were varying degrees of, you know, savviness related to how that system actually works. But they all were unified completely in their sort of frustration and inability to affect Washington and the feeling that, you know, as the election drew near, we started this in April of the election season. And so at that time, people were a lot more clear-eyed about the system and the process and wanting to have choices, you know. But as we tracked the election up until Election Day, we saw people retreat to their corners, and we saw the effects of these divisive campaigns and all of the money spent to get us out to vote, and all the people that probably in April said they wanted to have lots of choices were now in their corners and fighting with each other and, you know, impassioned over what seemed like wedge issues.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Christopher Kay, director of a new documentary film. It's called Of, By, For. If you have a question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. You said, I read in an interview someone did with you, that you said at first you were just going to go stick with that road trip and just talk to normal people, whatever that might mean. Then you decided to reach out to the insiders, from Newt Gingrich to Ron Paul and Al Sharpton. How did you decide who to include?
Well, it started pretty organically. Chad had a relationship with Newt Gingrich. Then we reached out to probably the most infamous, you know, lobbyist of our time anyway, Jack Abramoff. Then we came across Michael Steele and Lanny Davis. Lanny was Clinton's chief counsel for a while. Lanny Davis was the former chair of the RNC, and they formed Purple Nation Solutions. And it sort of grew organically from there, and we decided, number one, I mean, our biggest goal was to try to keep it balanced. We didn't want this to be a smear campaign on any one party or any one politician or anything. And we wanted to give everyone a bit of a home, but no one to feel super comfortable. So we began trying to fill gaps on the left or the right as different interviews came into place.
The role of the parties and the lack of a viable third party or third party alternative is examined pretty closely in the film. Ralph Nader is one of your subjects. What did you learn about how third parties are drained of their will and resources to field viable candidates? It's not that they're illegal, but they're rendered useless at a certain point in the process.
Nearly completely. I mean, the two parties, the state legislatures are in charge of determining the laws for who can be on the ballot. Well, the problem, of course, is that the state legislatures are made up of Democrats and Republicans. And they made laws that said the two parties have automatic ballot access, and any third party has to qualify by petition, and then also do a certain percentage of the election as well. So what happens is between those laws, as well as the lawsuits that they file against third parties, I think in the film, Ralph Nader, you know, I forget how many laws, 24 lawsuits, I think, filed in 2004. And so that drains a third party of all of their money and time and volunteer resources just fighting to get on the ballot. So they don't have the, I think he ended up with like a 6 or 7 week campaign in 2004. Mm-hmm. Well, of course, you know, I just read in Politico today, like they're already starting 2016 picking and campaigning, and super PACs are being established and stuff. So third parties are really fought from the get-go by the two major parties.
So when you talk to a big shot like Newt Gingrich, how does he feel about that? What role has he played or could he play in changing any of that?
You know, I don't know if Newt sees that
as a problem
quite the same way. He, you know, his line in the movie was, it's sort of inevitable because at some point you have to decide how to organize power.
Right. But he acknowledged that the founding fathers did not conceive of this two-party system. Even
Correct.
As they built the parties, Hamilton and Jefferson, even as they built them, at least the rudiments of them,
Correct.
They didn't conceive of them this way.
No, they didn't. They, in fact, you know, Lisa Dish, a professor from Michigan, sorry.
That's okay. I'm from Michigan.
Okay, good. You know, she said that, you know, the founding fathers hated parties and they thought that it would lead to faction. And then Mickey Edwards, who was a former congressman and I think an adjunct professor at Princeton, you know, says that what we've evolved to is not that we have these factions where we can agree on issues and we can examine the issues on their merits, but we've, I guess, devolved into permanent factions, where all of our conversations are about across the aisle and working together and things like that. But that's absolutely contrary to the idea of political discourse. And you and I can agree on a lot of things. We can disagree over here, but, you know, we've evolved into the system where it's just always, you know, the Republican versus Democrat, generally anyway.
And especially in Congress and the Ohio House of Representatives, every 2 years, they're running for their life.
Yeah. Well, it's not even every 2 years. I mean, of course.
Well, it's constant.
Yeah. The cost of elections these days has created almost a permanent campaigning cycle. So you're never really off the hook for doing campaigns and raising money.
I don't know who said it in the film, but they made the salient observation of the irony that in a country that prides itself on consumer choices, in fact, is insistent on choice, allows politics to exist, I think, as she put it, a virtual cartel.
Cartel, yeah. That was Lisa.
Okay.
Yeah, we do. And I mean, that was one of the things that we originally set out to examine, was this sort of very strange mental gymnastics we do, where we can have 500 choices of toothpaste and soda and everything else, but somehow we allow politics to function as a cartel.
There was a study done last year, I think, trying to figure out how much typical average voters know about the political process and the role of money in it and so forth. And a shocking number really didn't completely understand, for instance, what the impact of Citizens United, the Supreme Court decision in 2010, what impact that had or would have on the elections. Does that have something to do with it? Do they think maybe they're perceiving that there's a choice out there that really isn't, or what?
Yeah, maybe. I mean, I think people know that it's everyone, pretty much everyone across Route 66 said things like lesser of two evils, you know, pick your poison, things like that. But So I think that they feel the lack of choice, but I don't think that they, a lot of people don't understand the manipulation and the dysfunctional system that has evolved over time. And so I think that, number one, their sort of lack, their frustration over their ability to have any kind of effect on the system aids in that disillusionment, you know. But then also, I mean, the parties, they work really, really hard to convince, you know, Mickey Edwards, or no, it was Bill Hilsman who ran Ralph Nader's campaign, Paul Wellstone, and a bunch of third-party guys. You know, he said there's an entire industry out there to convince you and I that we're not actually an independent voter, that we are really a Republican or a Democrat. And the polls and the media work really hard at that, too.
When you talk about the media, because the issue of media was brought up quite a bit, what do you mean by media? What do you think people mean by that when they say media?
Well, it's become to be kind of a catch-all term for, you know, Dan Rather said, you know, I prefer to call it the press, but most people call it the media. But, you know, when you have people like Fox News and MSNBC and sort of...
So it's the mass electronic media.
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that's how we would define it, yeah.
Any concerns or observations about how the shrinking variety and choice of media, so especially print, is having an impact on any of this?
Well, in a lot of ways, I mean, the choices have expanded.
On the television.
For sure. I think the bigger underlying problem is that we've devolved into a country of divisiveness. And we, if you listen to the majority, like the bit in the movie with all the talking heads and the pundits and stuff, you know, even the major issues of our day are dealt with in disrespectful and divisive ways. Even the issue of taxes, the way it's framed often is, you know, rich against poor, and not that there's not any truth to that. But so I think it seems like we have less and less choice. Well, and then there's the fact that all the major media outlets, there's basically five or six companies that own every media outlet in the country.
Mm-hmm.
And so you do have this kind of shrinking perspective. You know, Dan Rather talked a lot about how it used to be family-run media companies, and they had, there was this notion in the press that a portion of your time, and well, just with TV stations, that a portion of your time would be given to public service, and that it wasn't a time to make money, you know. But now, I mean, these talk shows, they're making millions and millions and millions of dollars.
Is there anything from making the film of By Four that surprised you? Is there anything you actually learned? Because you're pretty savvy going into it. You've got some political background. Anything you took away from it that...
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that things that we all sort of know and sort, or at least suspect about the way things work and the way that money particularly gets into the system, it was surprising to hear a guy like Jack Abramoff describe exactly how moneyed interests get into the system.
He knew exactly what he was doing.
Yeah. And I mean, what better guy to tell you, hey, this is how it works, because I've done it over and over and over again. So that was interesting and refreshing. I also was completely, I think, shared most people's, you know, being very despondent about our ability to change things. And so I think that really understanding the role of division in our country has actually brought some hope, you know, because like Dan Rather says in the end of the film, you know, we've proven, history has shown that when we stand together, we can change things, and we can change things pretty rapidly. Now, there's some laws on the books currently that I think are going to make it really hard, but I think it's a really good first step. And so that was sort of refreshing and exciting for me to learn.
Okay, we'll talk about some of those laws and more. Christopher Kay, director of the film Of, By, For, will stay with us. Coming up, we'll hear from the Americans for Campaign Reform. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
Tom Ashbrook. Coming up on the Next On Point, immigration reform and the GOP, the big Republican debate over whether the party should go for diversity or just go white. That's coming up on the Next On Point from NPR.
This afternoon at 1 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Jazz Arts Group. Jazz Zoo continues this Friday, July 19th at the Columbus Zoo. The Columbus Jazz Orchestra and guest vocalists Jonathan Elliott and Nia Allen recreate the CJO's latest album, Come Together, from start to finish, live on stage. Details and tickets at jazzartsgroup.org.
The WOSU Member Card Benefit of the Month for July is the Columbus Children's Theater. Enjoy 2-for-1 admission all month long. Visit WOSU.org.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about money and politics, or the money in politics, or the politics in money. Is campaign finance reform the answer? A constitutional amendment? And is Congress up to the task in either event or any event? The U.S. Supreme Court decision in Citizens United has been thoroughly demonized as not only part of the problem, but as an exacerbation of a problem that has exceeded even the most pessimistic expectations. In the 2010 ruling, the United States Supreme Court held that the First Amendment prohibits the government from restricting political independent expenditures by corporations, associations, or labor unions, opening the floodgates. And we've seen the impact, especially in Ohio, on third-party organizations spending for and against candidates. In the documentary Of, By, For, former Cleveland mayor, Ohio congressman, and presidential candidate Dennis Kucinich puts the impact of Citizens United this way.
Look, this place is an auction right now. Policy goes to the highest bidder. After Buckley versus Leo and Citizens United, you know, it's like the golden rule. The guy with the gold makes the rules. And this is a problem we have.
Still with me is the director of By Four, Christopher Kay. He's with me in the studio. Joining us now by phone from New Hampshire is Rob Warner. He's field director for Americans for Campaign Reform. Welcome to the show, Rob.
Thanks very much. Glad to be with you.
Before we get into some of the details of campaign finance reform, such as they are, let's talk about one of its biggest obstacles, the American public's apathy. They complain all the time about the incessant commercials, the robocalls, and what they perceive as kowtowing to special interests. But just 40% correctly identified what a super PAC was in a Washington Post Pew Research poll last year. And I'm wondering, how can the public change what it doesn't appear to understand very well?
Well, I think the American public, first of all, they understand that something is seriously wrong with our political system, and that they do feel shut out. They are shut out. All polls show that amongst Republicans, Democrats, and Independents. So they know that something is deeply flawed and wrong with our political system, and that our democracy is not operating as it should, as they hope, as we've been taught that it should. But I think there's an awful lot of education that needs to occur so that people understand what the effect of money in politics means and what are the alternatives to counter it.
Elected officials often, I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt, mostly go into their jobs with high hopes. Part of the film that we're talking about today points out that as soon as they get to Congress, however, speaking of national elected officials, as soon as they get to Congress, they are embraced by the party and they begin the transformation into ATM machines.
Well, unfortunately, that is true. I had heard just recently that there was a memorandum that was prepared by the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee that was instructing freshmen legislators, freshman members of Congress, that they need to expect to spend about 4 hours a day, every day, raising money for their caucus. And just the same happens on the Republican side of the aisle, I'm sure. You know, the average U.S. senator is spending about 40% of their time raising money. This is not what we elected these folks to do. And there are alternatives, and I would really point to some of the systems that are operating in some states and municipalities as models.
Such as?
Well, you have public funding of election systems. That's what we advocate at Americans for Campaign Reform. We are a national organization chaired by Al Simpson, Bill Bradley, Bob Kerry, Christine Todd Whitman, former governor of New Jersey, is involved with us. So we are a very bipartisan group, and we support very strongly the concept of small donor public funding. And you can see that those systems are operating quite well in places like Arizona, Connecticut, Maine, New York City, Seattle. Their voters will have a chance to weigh in on if they want to head in that direction in November. So there are systems that are working well, and again, they are models.
New York City accepted a lot of relatively sparsely populated regions. How do you see something like public funding working on a national level?
Well, there's no reason to think that it could not work on a national level, because it really is simply, this is not theory. As I said, there are systems that are working well, and it's a matter of scaling it up to take in a national legislature. And also, we need to take a look at the presidential public funding system that worked quite well for 20 years, but is now in dire need of reform as well in the same way. What we would like to see is a system of matching funds. You're matching small donors with public funds at a pretty high level, 4-to-1, 5-to-1, 6-to-1, so that those small donations are leveraged to the resources that folks need to run for office and to get their message out.
How would you make it work in a state, like, let's compare Connecticut to Ohio for just a minute. Connecticut, mm-hmm. probably one major media market in Connecticut, one or two maybe. In Ohio, 6 to 7 major media markets. It's just expensive. And the irony is that this is where it all ends up in the final analysis in the last two presidential elections. But it's expensive in Ohio versus other states. How do you get the practical balance there when it comes to public funding?
Well, we start out with the fact we don't necessarily think there's too much money spent in politics, or you don't need to get all money out of politics. Mm-hmm. We want to reduce the influence of large donors and special interests. That doesn't mean that in our political system that you should expect to run political campaigns without resources. Quite the contrary. In a place like Connecticut versus Ohio, it's a matter of figuring out what is, what's needed. Because there's a couple of things that are very important in any kind of public funding of election system. Number one, you have to have a way of creating a threshold for qualification that's reasonable for people to reach. They need to expend a lot of hard effort to get those public funds. They need to prove that they have support in their constituencies, in their communities, and only then should they get access to public funds. And also, you need to make sure that you provide adequate funds for candidates to run viable and competitive campaigns. So in your question, it'd be a matter of, yes, a candidate running statewide in Ohio would be able to collect more resources than one running in a smaller state, particularly one here, like in New Hampshire, for example. Mm-hmm. That's just the political reality.
You're listening to All Sides with Ann Fisher on 89.7 NPR News. I'm talking with Rob Werner. He's Field Director of Americans for Campaign Reform. If you have a question or comment for Rob, you're welcome to join the conversation. Give us a call, 614-292-8513. Christopher Kay, did you want to?
Yeah, Rob, so in your understanding of how that would work, who would set those thresholds? Because part of our film examines how the two parties have set the rules for ballot access and some of that, and some of the concern that we've heard with public funding is that that same manipulation would happen to keep third parties out. So do you guys have a perspective on that?
Well, on a national basis, there's a number of pieces of legislation that would create systems such as these. And although it's fair to say that the Federal Election Commission is a highly dysfunctional agency today, that doesn't mean that it always has to be that way. So you would need a place like that to set these thresholds. You also would need to build in a way to examine the results. You know, you go through a couple cycles of a program like this, and you need to have the ability to be able to adjust where adjustments are needed, whether that be in the thresholds that are required to qualify for funding or the type and amount of funding that is provided. On the state level and in New York City, and also in Los Angeles, also has a system of public funding of elections, which they recently have reformed to provide a higher match. There are sort of independent agencies that govern the system and that play the role that I described.
What if Citizens United, where would that go in a public funding of elections scenario?
Well, you know, we obviously disagree with the concept of the basis of the Citizens United decision, but it's the world in which we live at the moment anyway.
Mm-hmm.
Any public funding of election system must be voluntary in order to meet the constitutional requirements. You cannot compel people to participate in these systems, because that would be a violation of the free speech principles that have been put forth in recent court decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So no matter what we do in terms of reform, we cannot say that folks cannot spend their own money on full-page ads and newspapers, and it all revolves around a form of speech. However, what you can do is to provide an alternative. And people sometimes say, well, wait a minute, maybe your question is leading to this. You have this system, this alternative in public funding of elections, yet you have this unfettered system of corporations, unions, 501c4s, and everything. How do you counter that flood of money? Why would a candidate who takes public funding, uses that system, have any chance in terms of the size of their megaphone versus what may be opposing them? And the answer is that candidates typically don't succeed because they have trouble getting elected because they are not able to gather enough resources. This would provide a way to do that. You don't need the most money to win an election. You need enough money. There's a threshold at which the big spenders, and every campaign cycle is replete with this, that the people that are outspending their opponents 5, 6, 7 to 1, look at California in the last cycle, did not win. And that is because there is a diminishing point. There's a point of diminishing return that's rather dramatic that is not going to help you gain any more votes. So really, it is public funding can still operate in these systems or in this context of Citizens United as long as those candidates can gather enough resources to get their message out.
I hear you on the point of diminishing returns because we live in Ohio.
Sure.
But I don't see where a third-party candidate has ever, and have a hard time imagining where a third-party candidate would ever even come close to that point of diminishing returns before they're pretty much wiped off the face of the political map.
Well, I'm not talking about a third-party candidate. I'm talking about people that are running you know, as Democrats, Republicans within the party system.
Okay.
Because now public funding of elections should provide monies to folks who are independents and run independent campaigns as long as they meet all the qualification requirements. But I'm really not talking about that. I'm talking about people who are running for office. If they're running as Democrats, Republicans, typically they're challenging incumbent members of Congress. They're running for open seats. This is the way it works in the states that I mentioned. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the participation rates in the states and the municipalities that I mentioned are very high on both sides of the aisle. In Connecticut, for example, you have about 80% of everybody sitting in those legislative seats in Hartford have been elected with public funding of elections, Republicans and Democrats alike. The governor has been elected through public funding of elections. In Arizona, you had Governor Napolitano elected twice, and her Republican successor elected, and also using public funding of elections. So it is a system that is highly popular with the public in those states and is well used by political leaders on both sides of the aisle.
Any thoughts about campaign finance enforcement? The Boston Globe in July wrote that America's campaign finance watchdog, the Federal Election Commission, is hobbled by its own commissioners. Is that part of the equation anymore or not necessarily?
No. Well, enforcement is very important. Enforcement is something that, you know, builds public confidence. If you don't have public confidence, and we need to build that back into the system. That's a very difficult situation. Now, you know, the president has nominated recently two folks to the Federal Election Commission, but I think, as you know, all of them are past their terms of office.
Mm-hmm.
It's a worse than dysfunctional agency at the moment. There is an opportunity to change that. I would hope that the administration would be willing to, again, go out and educate the American people as to why it's important and fight for these nominees and to try to convince the folks in Congress that this is important to do.
Let's take a quick call. Ray in Columbus, you're on the air with Rob Werner of Americans for Campaign Reform. Hi, Ray.
Hello.
Ray, you're on the air.
Yes. I was saying to the other man that they need to have full disclosure of all contributions made.
You think
that would be
okay.
I think that would help.
Okay.
I think the Republicans are like allowing too much money being put in by people or companies.
You think it's just the Republicans?
I'd say it's both of them, but I think the Republicans are worse off, but maybe it's because I'm a Democrat.
Okay, right. All right. Thanks a lot, Ray, for that call. Rob Werner, what about the disclosure issue?
Disclosures are very important. It's a fundamental value that we need to place into our political system. If you're going to have a public funding of election system, you need to have the disclosure and transparency along with it. And, you know, there is legislation in Congress a year ago. It was on the Senate floor. I got some discussion. U.S. Senate floor did not get enough votes to proceed. But any system of transparency and disclosure, I think, needs to treat all players the same. All players, meaning unions, corporations, 501c4s, which I think is a particular problem right now on both sides of the aisle. And this situation is a sort of an equal opportunity issue. No one party can claim, I think, the high ground on this. We have gotten ourselves into the worst of all worlds where you have a system after Citizens United of unfettered spending and no transparency and disclosure. I think people need to remember that within the Citizens United decision, the Supreme Court, by an 8-1 vote, upheld the value of transparency and disclosure and the constitutionality of transparency and disclosure. And I think that perhaps it was the hope that of some of the justices that, yes, on the one hand, we will allow this spending to occur through this decision, but we would also hope that transparency and disclosure will follow on as part of that, and that has not happened. So again, we find ourselves in the worst of all worlds in that regard.
Rob Werner, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate it.
Well, thanks so much. I enjoyed it.
Rob Werner, he's field director of Americans for Campaign Reform. Coming up, we're going to hear from a senior legal fellow at the Heritage Foundation. So stay with us. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Dan Fisher on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Coming up on Here and Now, the Pittsburgh Pirates have had 20 straight losing seasons, but heading into the All-Star break, they have one of the best records in baseball. We'll look at how smart investing could help them end that long losing streak. And can American parents learn anything from moms and dads in Japan? Coming up on Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston.
This afternoon from 2 till 4 on 89.7 NPR News.
Support comes from the Physicians Free Clinic and Voluntary Care Network, providing charity medical care for Central Ohio's uninsured patients. More about joining the Columbus Medical Association Foundation in supporting the clinic is at goodhealthcolumbus.org.
On the next Fresh Air, religion scholar Reza Aslan. The author of a bestseller about Islam has written a new book about the historical Jesus. He says he was a Christian for a time as a teenager after his family fled Iran for the U.S.
Part of the conversion experience for me was trying to feel accepted in this new country, trying to feel as American as possible.
Join us.
Today at noon on 89.7 NPR News.
Support 89.7 NPR News at $85 and receive the WOSU member card. Good for discounts at more than 200 partners. Visit wosu.org/membercard.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about the intersection of money and politics, where there's politics, there's money, and vice versa. In the documentary film Of, By, For, former Speaker of the House and presidential candidate Newt Gingrich talked about the relationship between money and lobbyists.
What you have to worry about is when it becomes a closed system, when it's the rich company hiring the insider to lobby the insider who raises money from the rich company, and it's all done in a way that you and I have no relationship to it, then I think you have to worry about it.
Does that happen now?
It happens far more than it should. But the other part of that is you have government's too big. When you have a multi-trillion dollar government, the number of goodies on the table is so great, you're going to get lobbyists.
Still with us is Of, By, For director Christopher Kay. In the studio joining us now is Hans von Spakovsky. He's senior legal fellow at Heritage Foundation. Welcome to the show, Hans.
Well, thanks for having me on.
So what about that size of government? How much do you think it plays into the larger problems that we face with campaign funding in the United States?
Well, I think it's true. When the federal government has so much control over the economy, huge numbers of regulations, corporations, unions, other organizations, they have to lobby the government, talk to officials, because everything the government does can affect their interests, their issues, and their business.
You believe that the decision made in Citizens United in 2010 was the correct one. Can you expand on why you're comfortable with that decision? It's been demonized pretty much across the board by many.
Well, they simply said that you don't lose your First Amendment rights if you decide to incorporate or join a union, because it applied to both. And whenever I hear people saying that this was a bad decision, I ask them, well, do you think the New York Times versus Sullivan case was a bad decision? Remember, that was the classic case that extended First Amendment rights to the New York Times company, not individual rioters of the New York Times Company. And, you know, why would the First Amendment, the ability to engage in political speech, it not apply to other entities, corporations, unions, et cetera?
But it did increase the amount of money at play in third-party organizations in the last couple of election cycles, well, the last election cycle especially. Are you comfortable with that? Are you concerned at all about it?
Let me make 2 points there. Mm-hmm. First of all, the Citizens United decision was in January 2010. Mm-hmm. What happened in the November congressional elections of that year? We had the most competitive congressional elections since the 1930s. That kind of competition is good. Second of all, I know people complain about money in politics, but if you total up all of the money spent in the U.S., federal, state, it was probably a little over $4 billion. We spend more money on advertising for fast food restaurants in the U.S. That is not a lot of money to be spending in what is basically advertising for politics, educating the American people on the candidates and what they think about various issues and how to solve the problems that we have in the U.S.
Well, that's interesting, educating people about the candidates, because really there's only a couple candidates in the final analysis. And do you really feel like they're getting the kind of education they deserve for the however many billions of dollars was spent in the last presidential election? Does that necessarily translate into a good education?
Well, you know, it is the candidates and others trying to tell Americans, you know, what they believe in and why they should vote for them, and the American people then make their choice. And I don't see how restricting the amount of money candidates, for example, could spend is in any way good for the political system that we have, because then you're restricting their ability to speak.
We just spoke with Rob Warner, the field director of Americans for Campaign Reform, and they support public funding of elections. I would imagine you don't, but can you tell us why that may
be
a bad idea?
I'll give you three reasons for it. First of all, there's a great new study out from the University of Missouri in South Carolina where they look at states with existing public funding. And what they look at is, has it reduced public corruption in those states in comparison to states that don't have public funding? And the answer is no. The second issue is, look, the only way to fund that kind of thing is through taxes. And I don't know about you, but I think it's a basic violation of my associational rights under the First Amendment for the government to tax me, and then you give that money to candidates that I disagree with on issues. There's no other way to appropriately fund a program like that, and I think it violates basic rights. The other thing is, look, fundraising is a way that candidates, again, get their ideas out. People give money to candidates if they like their ideas, like their approach to issues. If a candidate can't raise any money, it's because voters don't like them and don't like the positions they take on issues.
Christopher Kay, did you want to jump in there?
Yeah. So what would you say about the fact that, you know, I think Rob just brought it up, but it's also in the film that, I mean, nearly half the time of a congressman or senator is spent fundraising.
About 40%.
Not only that, I mean, it certainly gives access to lobbyists and special interest money.
Well, I always have to laugh when people talk about lobbyists and special interest money. The First Amendment has a provision in it that says that every American has the right to petition the government for redress of grievances. And if I want to join an organization like the Sierra Club because I believe in a clean environment, I want the Sierra Club up talking to my representatives in Congress to persuade them to pass the kind of legislation regulation I think is necessary to have a clean environment. That is part of the American system. What are you going to do? Tell associations, tell individuals, tell others they're not allowed to speak to members of Congress or try to persuade them on particular issues?
So would you say that moneyed interests don't have more access than an individual?
Well, I think that depends on the individual, and it depends on the group. I may not have as much money as someone in Hollywood who gets access to the president, but if, for example, I believe in the Second Amendment and gun rights, I can band together with other individuals who have the same beliefs and maybe not as many resources as me, and we can join the National Rifle Association, and they can push the views forward that we believe in. Associations are a way of countering individuals, for example, that have more money than others to spend on politics.
My guest, Hans von Spakovsky, he is Senior Legal Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Also with me in the studio, Christopher Kay, director of a new documentary. It's called Of, By, For. It is in Columbus. Limited engagement. For more information, you can go to our website at WOSU.org/allsides. Hans, you talked about in order to get enough public funding, it would have to be, you see it leading to a taxation for funding.
Right.
You've written that you're in favor of eliminating the presidential election campaign fund, that voluntary $3 box that someone can check on their taxes. Why eliminate that if it's voluntary?
Well, first of all, the American people don't support it. When it first came out, about 30% of folks would volunteer on their tax return to contribute money. That's down to, last time I looked, it was like 6 or 7%. But the other point of it is that it's now the money isn't going to get used. Up until President Obama ran for office, that public campaign fund was actually used by the major presidential candidates in the general election. What would happen is they would get funding through this program, and they would stop raising private funding for the general election. But
right.
You may recall, President Obama decided not to do that. Senator McCain did. Because of that, Obama outspent McCain by 3 or 4 times in the general election. But that made it basically impossible for anyone to continue in that program because you'll get outspent. And, of course, in the last election, neither Romney nor Obama took the public funding in lieu of private financing. And I can tell you, I just about guarantee you, in any future presidential election, no one is going to take that public funding.
Is there a legal way, do you think, should there be any limit to the amount of money going into political campaigns?
The Supreme Court has said that you cannot limit expenditures. You can limit the amount people are able to contribute
to campaigns.
To campaigns. Mm-hmm. But in terms of, if you're talking about, for example, limiting independent expenditures, if somebody, you know, for example, someone who wants to spend money to take out a page in the New York Times and talk, no, you can't do that because that's a basic First Amendment right. And it isn't just in Citizens United that the Supreme Court has said you can't do that. They have said that in numerous cases.
Mm-hmm. What about disclosure of donations of people who fund those third-party campaigns?
Well, there's already some limited disclosure of that. But again, I would point you to the fact that, look, in the 1950s, as you know, the NAACP went to court all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court to avoid having to disclose its members. And I don't believe private organizations like the Sierra Club, whether it's someone on the left side of the political aisle or the National Rifle Association, if it's on the right side of the political aisle, should have to disclose their members. Again, that is information protected by the First Amendment. Look, if a political ad comes on that's paid for by the National Rifle Association or the Sierra Club, I kind of know where what political side they're coming from, and I don't see how some kind of massive disclosure of all their donors is going to change my mind as a voter.
Are you concerned about the state of the Federal Election Commission as it stands right now? I think it works.
No, because I actually know many of the commissioners there on both sides of the political aisle. Mm-hmm. And what is not said is that if you look at their enforcement cases, in other words, where they are actually going after people for violating the law, they pretty much vote together. They have hundreds of enforcement cases every year. The places where they disagree, where they have tie votes, is when it comes to implementing regulations. And the biggest problem they've had in the last 2 years, 3 years actually, has been trying to redo their regulations after the Citizens United decision. And the reason for the impasse has been because a number of the Democratic commissioners have wanted to try to reverse the Supreme Court's holding through more restrictive regulations, whereas the Republican commissioners have said, look, we can't do that. We've got to simply implement what the court has done. And that's what's led to the fight amongst the commissioners on new regulations.
An issue that's raised in the film of By Four is the tax code and the complexities of the tax code, and that because it is so complex, it's means that there are a complex number of portals into Congress and in places that need special interest influence to manage change, amend somehow. What, in your opinion, you know, would simplifying the tax code be something that you would support? Is it something that you think is a problem when it comes to campaign finance and when it comes to the pay-to-play thing?
I absolutely think that the tax code should be simplified. Look, I'm a lawyer, been one for years. I have problems at the end of the year trying to figure out the tax code. And because of that, it's massive. There are huge numbers of parts of the code where there are loopholes that exist if you can find out about them. And because of that, all sorts of groups, it's not just businesses, but it's also unions and others, are constantly trying to get parts of the code changed to give them an advantage. And simplifying the code would, frankly, get rid of a lot of that.
Is there anything else that you think could help the system? Right now, we talked earlier in the program that most people don't even understand how the system operates anymore. They just know that in the end of the day, they don't feel like they have much choice.
Well, you know, that's not so much the campaign finance system, but the fact that we have a two-party system, one that we've had now for a very long time. And as you know, that's unusual in parliamentary systems and in Europe, for example, where they have multiple parties. That really has nothing, like I said, it has nothing to do with campaign finance rules. That has more to do with state rules on how you get qualified to be a candidate. And there are many states across the country that make it extremely difficult for third-party candidates to get qualified and be on the ballot. I can tell you that would change if state legislatures simplified the rules and made it easier for third-party candidates to get on the ballot.
Which, of course, state legislatures are controlled by two parties.
That's right.
That have no vested interest in doing that. So yet another hurdle. Hans, I want to thank you for joining us. I really appreciate your time today.
Sure. Happy to do it.
Hans von Spakovsky, he's Senior Legal Fellow at the Heritage Foundation. Also, Christopher Kay, director of the film Of By Four. Christopher, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Anne.
Once again, Of By Four, it has a limited engagement in Columbus. For more information, go to our website at wosu.org/allsides, and you can learn more about that. Thanks for listening today. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU 89.7 and WOSU HD1 Columbus, streaming on the web at WOSU.org, 89.7 NPR News, your all-day NPR news station, a service of WOSU Public Media.